I just came from India, where we had a Kirtan Mela, and where we were chanting for 1 week, every day, actually 24 hours for 1 week. And then, of course, you can imagine that, different singers, you know, all kinds of flavors it was, and the best of the world were there, somewhere. Extremely good. I was the spare wheel, but somehow or other was also there. And you can imagine that that's when meditation takes off. It doesn't just come in 5 minutes, you know. Unless you are very deep, and there's like one singer. On the first note, he's in a trance, you know, he's like, he's gone, he's somewhere in another state of consciousness. Therefore, my topic will relate to consciousness. Because consciousness is an interesting theme. It's something that's hard to grasp. In empiric terms, it's hard to measure. It's hard to write it on the board in the form of a formula. But still, every living being is experiencing a state of consciousness, and obviously the state of consciousness that we have directly affects everything. We all know about IQ and EQ and things like that, and that even when the IQ is very high, when the EQ is not developed, that the person becomes an underachiever, in spite of, like, you know, very promising qualifications, somehow or other becomes an underachiever. So psychology, of course, dealt with the field and tried to map it out somehow or other. And to some extent, the modern approach is an approach of looking at symptoms and then categorizing symptoms. Basically, that's the way our modern knowledge operates. We categorize. We just take a particular field, study it nicely, look at the different elements, and try to categorize them. And when we've nicely categorized them, then in this way, we try to recognize patterns, repetitive functions, and so on. And then we hope to discover some laws, some principles, so that we get a hold on what is otherwise as chaotic as the weather. Consciousness. Right? How do you feel? Constantly. How are you? Constantly we have to ask. Right? How many times a day you have to ask, you know? How are you? 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 Are you okay? Are you okay? And see, can you see, like, it's something like the weather, and at the Cape you get a good variety of it, and in a short time things can really turn around. But consciousness is also like that. Some people may have a more stable type of consciousness, and some may have a very turbulent type of consciousness. Well, first of all, consciousness is related to communication, because we are not just entities within ourselves. We are entities in relation to an environment, to other living beings, and so on. And all these external factors directly influence our consciousness. Yeah. So, therefore, we can influence our consciousness by what by the impressions that go in. The idea of impressions came from Plato, and the idea that one could make a mark in wax, and like for a seal of a letter or something like that, seal it with wax, put a mark, and you have an impression in the wax. So there is a metaphor of consciousness being like a big lump of wax, and we're making all kinds of impressions in it, and they stay. And that's so that has survived the millennia, that metaphor, because obviously we can relate to it. So the word impression is very much established, and we are thanking our Greek philosophers for those roots. Yes, so we are absorbing so many things. Well, and that's what you see, you know, early in the morning, a newspaper, a cup of coffee on top, you know, and just like you just woke up and read all the hell and doom and misery of the world, you know, crisis here, flood there, murder there, just like ready for another day. That's the normal procedure right nowadays. And that's the standard lifestyle of the modern day world. That's what we do. Well, in traditional cultures, we see that people had a different approach. We see that mornings were often reserved for spiritual type of activities. The Vedic culture, the oldest culture in the world that we really have, is non-different in that respect. So, in the Vedic culture, the idea was that in the early morning, one should only see positive things. So, you know, you begin your day seeing positive things, so you get like a lot of positive impressions in the consciousness. Of course, okay, what is positive? That's that we can debate and and start a huge discussion on that. Some might say yes. In the morning, when I see money, I feel good. That's positive. It's a pile of money. Yeah, that's the first thing I see, money. I'm happy. So positive was considered to be of a different nature, something that is more durable. Money is such a thing. You got it and it's gone. And every time again, it comes and where did it go? I don't know. But well, some things we know, but a lot of it just evaporated. Well, we're looking at things that don't evaporate. So the foundation of the Vedic culture or of the Eastern mind, the Eastern mindset, is much more long-term than the Western mindset. Western mindset is quick, instant, now, and okay, it doesn't work, disposable. Right? Don't try to fix it, dump it, next. And don't look back, just move on. That's the Western model of consumer society. The Vedic, the more Eastern culture is much more inwards, right? Much more reflective. So, looking into the consciousness. Unlike our modern culture. Our modern culture is a culture where you're always engaged, constantly. You know, okay, I mean, got something to do? No, not really. Okay, let's watch a movie. No, let's do something. Okay, well, check your mail. I mean, you know, like, do something. But whatever you do, don't think. For God's sake. You're not going to think, are you? Oh, no, God. Don't do it. dangerous, it's dangerous, it's dangerous. And once you start it, it's addictive. It's addictive, and initially, you know, it seems to be a great boost when you start thinking, but soon you'll find it pulls you down. It pulls you down like anything. Your whole consciousness will go down the drain because you start to question everything, all the values that you grew up with and everything that you're learning. And, you know, basically the whole life that has been sort of designed for you and that we are part of, when you start to think, you may put a question mark to it. Don't do it. Watch out. So, the East is very different because Vedic culture is a culture that in principle is very thoughtful and has exactly explored consciousness long before it was, long before Adler, Freud, and Jung were inventing Western psychology. In this way, when looking at consciousness, the East has something to offer. Of course, all traditional cultures have a religious conception of reality. And it's only quite recent, actually, that we have a fundamentally atheistic outlook on life. And then, you know, as like our basic premise, and then from there, well, we can consider if there is any evidence or any indication that possibly there might be some intelligent design after all. Yeah? It could be. Darwin doesn't stand as solid as he used to. So possibly it's an option, intelligent design these days. It's welcome. It's no longer banned from educational institutions, we can consider. But our basic premise is that this is an area, the existence of a god or an afterlife or all these kind of things are absolutely impossible to prove and therefore placed into a realm of belief, sentiment, fanaticism, and these kind of concepts are connected to it. Leaving a lot of people feeling quite dissatisfied. We're seeing a society which which doesn't encourage people towards higher ideals. Without spirituality, it's difficult. You have humanism. Humanism, basically, that we are going to try to be good people, kind and loving and good to all, right? Without any religion, but just because human existence is offering this kind of options to be noble. To go like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway, you know, give me the cash. Anyway, you know, it's a little difficult, right? To, without spirituality, to have noble ideas and to maintain such principles. Like, you know, they said in South Africa, where HIV is so, so present, we see it in the media and so on. And then at the side of the road, I saw this billboard which said, it was a condom campaign. And it said, when you go casual, dress formal. Huh? You seen that one? Yeah? Anyway, when you go casual, dress formal. And then in Manila, they had a conference and an AIDS conference, and they concluded the condom campaign didn't work. It didn't bring down the AIDS figures at all. It didn't work. So I said, like, what to do now? The only thing that will work is abstinence. I mean, are you real? Are you real? Abstinence? Come on, I mean, give us a break, right? If I would have made that my main topic today, abstinence, right, as a viable alternative, right? I think that would have been a great title for a lecture, abstinence as a viable alternative. And the whole campus would have looked at the poster and would have thought, like, scratch their head and go, like, this, and see my picture, and thought, this guy must be from the moon. Right? He must be really from another planet. I've never seen. But interesting enough, out of the AIDS conference in Manila, exactly that conclusion came. Abstinence is the way. Yeah. But who in the world, right? Who in the world would take such a course in life without living for higher ideals, you see? And that's like where spirituality can possibly add a dimension of meaning to something like that. Right? Without spirituality, why in the world would anybody even consider such a thing? It was a rainy day, and I had nothing better to do and then to read Darwin's biography of all books. Somehow or other, I stumbled on the thing, and I kept it on my ebook reader. And you know how it is with ebook readers. You read 20 books at a time, right? So I just opened up this biography of Darwin and started reading it. And I came to a section which I found a little interesting. It was describing how Darwin, basically seeing everything as a product of evolution, and could no longer tolerate any sentimental conception about life. The whole adding all kinds of dimensions to it, like spirituality and all that. He could not handle that any longer. He said, even these days, art. He said, I can't handle art. He said, art, is just adding all this sentimental sense of aesthetics, to reality. Whereas it's just basically a combination of chemicals and so on, nothing else, right? It's nothing else, and it doesn't make any sense, right, to just add any sense of aesthetics to it. So he said, he said, I can't even get myself to read Shakespeare anymore these days. Now, for someone from UK, that's a serious maha apparat, big offense. I mean, it couldn't be any more serious than that, right? God, Shakespeare. So, interesting how Darwin had now developed an allergy to art and aesthetics in life, because it seemed to indicate more than the reality of evolution. Interesting because it sort of indicates that it strips life. Right? The concept of an evolution strips life to a basic reality, which is so impoverished that even the founder of that concept felt that life was missing something. And he said, you know, sometimes, he wrote in his biography, he said, sometimes I wonder if I lost something. Yeah? So that's interesting. Yes, he lost something. He lost all taste in life. He lost all juice. They made it into something extremely dry. So the consciousness is actually being affected by a philosophical outlook. If I'm a bunch of chemicals, and that's all there is, and if, you know, any relationship in this world that I have is just that my chemicals are reacting very nice with your chemicals, yeah? If that's all that's going on, so our relationships are also just chemical, then every once in a while I need a drink. Then I need a drink, you know, just to deal with it all, you know, like, because, you know, one day my chemicals are gonna disintegrate. You know, if I really like that, you know, I'd like to keep the current combinations of molecules sort of a little longer in the shape they're in, you know, before they start, you know, entering into new formulas with other combinations. So you can see where I'm going to. Consciousness is not just haphazard response to external factors. No. Consciousness we get locked into a worldview, and the worldview has quite an impact on our perception and on our experience in life and on our emotional life. Because, yeah, the Vedas have their own principles. One principle in the Vedic context is Anandamay Vyasat, which means that every living being by nature is pleasure-seeking, right? Or, to say it in more modern terms, everyone wants to be happy, right? You know, really American, with Mickey Mouse. Walt Disney. And that's plastic, right? Walt Disney happiness is plastic. So that also doesn't work. You know, balloons, you know, balloons, cake, happy birthday. All right. And then the party's over. And I'm like, yeah, am I really happy? Not if you're against cake and balloons, but there is more to it. So, the Vedic thinkers, they saw that by nature man is inclined towards eternity. By nature, every living being, if given the choice, would rather live than die. You want to live. Okay, here's the cash. take it all. take everything. Yeah, okay. Isn't it? It's like that's what you're supposed to do when you get hijacked. Give everything with a smile. Take. Take this also. Take. Yes. So this intrinsic drive for survival. And where does it come from? Why? Why do we want to survive so much? Why? And it's a big thing, right? We just survived an almost plane crash when two big birds that didn't survive, poor birds, got sucked up into the engine as the plane was taking off. I read about it. It happened. okay, slam, you know, that last minute, the wheels were off the ground, but we aborted takeoff. Oh. Wow, survived. This, why do we want to survive so much? What's the problem? So therefore, you know, we can see that a materialistic outlook creates really some strong conflicts in our consciousness. If we are from a biochemical origin, we basically have a problem because I want to survive. I don't want my chemicals to dissolve into something else. I want to live. The Vedic culture is exactly harmonious with that particular drive in us. It is harmonious. It is exactly saying that, yes, we are eternal. We are eternal. We are eternal beings, and we have temporary relationships and eternal relationships. We find satisfaction in both, but only in eternal relationship is the satisfaction lasting. Yeah, makes sense. Therefore, in the Vedic understanding, to create a peaceful condition within the consciousness, one needs to be situated properly in a good spiritual foundation where the eternal aspect of life is taken care of. That creates fundamental peace. And then build on that with a material needs and comforts and so on. So, that may be nothing new, but one could have said, well, you know, my parents taught me the same thing, you know, like, and the old priest around the corner, he hammers on this point every time. But I explained it now in more modern terms. Yeah? And I've explained it in terms of showing the limitations of Darwinism. I've shown the Platonian contribution on our consciousness, and I have basically established here that we are conscious entities and that we have an individual experience within it. And yet, in spite of our individual experience, a common ground. So yes, so now how to survive in an educational institution? Well, these same principles apply, right? That we cannot just become swept up only in the temporary material aspect of our situation. I want to get that degree, right, somehow or other, because, you know, obvious gains that can be obtained from it, all right, you know, but the degree is not all in all. If the degree becomes all in all, then we are very vulnerable. What if you flunk an exam? Then, you know, some students jump off a tower or whatever, you know, yeah, too much pressure, too much anxiety. So when we have our foundation strong, our spiritual life strong, then we have our inner strength. We have an inner stability which is not affected by externals. Then we are not just a ball on the waves. Then we are anchored deeply. Our basic consciousness is there in accepting an eternal reality, a higher reality, and we're lined up, our activities are lined up. So therefore, yes, our mantra meditation or another form of meditation to reconnect with that spiritual basis. Then, mind is peaceful, consciousness peaceful, then you can deal with the external world as much as you can. And what you cannot do, let it go. Just let it go. And then detachment kicks in, because no matter how smart you are, you can't win all the time. Nobody wins all the time. Yeah? It's like, it doesn't work, you know? No matter how big a success you are, whether you are a star, you can't win all the time in the material world. Yeah? Not possible. So, when you lose, well, nobody wants to lose, but then, when you have a deep, when you have a spiritual foundation, then you can approach it with detachment. Oh well, what to do? Win a few, lose a few. But when you have no spiritual foundation at all, and you go through successes and failures, then when you fail, then it's the end of the world. Then it's like, you know, I mean, my whole, everything I worked for, everything I did everything for, it's just, you know, it's just finished. Oh my God. Utter darkness, utter depression, utter misery. Oh no. Oh God. We lost everything. Or when it's a success, it's a party. I got my degree. Oh yes, the funny hat and everything. And it's great, you know. Oh God, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I've made it. I'm a success. Oh, and what's next? Oh, in all these years, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to finish this education, to get this degree. And finally, I got it. And now what's coming is the corporate world is waiting for you. Yes, and they're going to take over your life, and they have a strategy. They're good at it. Oh, they hired professionals to figure it out, how to entrap you, how to ensnare you, how to squeeze you, how to make you a productive member of society. And some days, when you're not watching TV or playing with a computer or a phone, you might for a moment just fall back into that old habit of thinking. And you might just think, is this all there is? Is this all there is? Don't think. I mean, you know, send some emails, download your email. You can always do that, you know, like keep you busy. Okay, put on a movie at the same time, or like, you know, eat something, put something in the microwave, whatever. Keep yourself busy, a busy, productive member of society. Going forward, and like the new South Africa, the youth, the educated youth of today is building the future, and you're part of it. And you know, we're proud of you. Proud of you, students of UCT. All glories to your contribution. Thank you so much. Any questions, maybe, at this point of the presentation? Must allow some time for discussion, so scratch your chin, pull your nose, and see if any question comes out. I'll pour myself a cup of tea. You are BYS, you know, so I guess you are people who have thought a bit of forbidden activity, and I've tasted a bit of the forbidden fruit. Is it? I think so. I think you have possibly thought and even reached some conclusions where you can see that materialism is is not the all in all. I think maybe you have also seen the other side. You have seen at least remnants of a South Africa. I don't know exactly when you were born. It was by somewhere 94 is maybe not so far away from your date of birth, right? Whereas that was an interesting year, a year when South Africa changed officially. Don't know if it really changed, but officially it changed in 94. And at that time, we're looking back at a country which was driven by a rigid form of Christianity. Okay? I happen to be Dutch, so I feel I have a right to speak, because after all, you know, they came here from the Netherlands. And one reason why I like South Africa is because somehow or other, on my spiritual search at a young age, I went to India, and then I stayed for a long time in India, and I absorbed a lot from India. So in a way, I became, I learned a lot about India. Then when I came to South Africa, I found that I was more Dutch than the Afrikaners. I was more Indian than the Indians. And with the Africans, I like music, and so do they. So we understand each other on that level. That's easy. That's just easy, you know? It's like with any African, you know, like, okay, there's music. Okay, now we're talking. Yeah? So that's how, somehow or other, I came to this country. And it's interesting. So this lecture had obviously a purpose, and the aim of this lecture was to kind of, for a moment, take you off the beaten track of the paradigm where we grew up. I got a couple of minutes, and that means, okay. Yes, she's told me, gave me the 2 o'clock, and you give. He says, "You got a couple of minutes." What does that mean? I have a couple of minutes. All right. My final word then is: I hope that this lecture took you out for a second, out of the beaten track, the routine of every day, South Africa, where you grew up, and made it for a moment, just give you a different lens to look at the situation. That lens of eternity, that lens of Vedic wisdom will give you a foundation of strength which cannot be shaken by anything external. That will make you a real survivor, even if you have a couple seconds. Thank you very much.